Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris today and to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, May 17th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at today's weather forecast from KCRG. A backdoor cold front moved from east to west across the state overnight, carrying a slightly cooler and drier air mass with it. Thus, clouds will be hard to come by, and temperatures will be a little cooler than yesterday. Still, it will feel pretty warm. Expect highs to the low to mid-70s, with the warmest readings in the west. The sky will likely appear somewhat milky, despite a generally clear sky due to upper-level wildfire smoke that will be present. This is coming from the fires in western Canada, getting wrapped up in the mid- to upper-level flow and getting dragged into the region by the aforementioned cold front. This will likely stick around through Friday, with a separate cold front pushes through and starts to change our air mass yet again. There's still a chance that front could pull down some of that smoke closer to the surface, so it's this time period where we'll be watching out for any potential air quality concerns. The same front will be associated with shower and storm activity, which will potentially develop later on Thursday afternoon and evening, especially overnight Thursday night into Friday. Rainfall amounts are likely to be light, at a quarter inch or less for most, and severe weather looks pretty unlikely at this time. Temperatures warm a bit ahead of the front into the upper 70s and lower 80s once again. Highs will see a setback from the front being held back in the upper 60s to lower 70s on Friday and Saturday. A warming trend will begin, though, with readings back near or above normal next week. In fact, we may be in for an extended period of warmer weather again. The latest outlook from the Climate Prediction Center for the 8 to 14 days out period from now strongly favors above normal temperatures, continuing to wrap up May. Now let's see what's on the front page of the Courier today. We have these articles to read. Senators talk about efforts in legislature, remodeled City Hall feted, former Waterloo teen shot to death, and we begin reading the story at the top of the page, conversion therapy banned. Waterloo Council gives final okay to ordinance revision on first reading. This story, submitted by Maria Cooper, begins with a photograph taken from inside the City Hall meeting showing residents that packed the Waterloo City Council chambers Monday to discuss a ban on conversion therapy. Dateline is Waterloo. 2 months after the introduction of an ordinance and following multiple hours of public comments, the city has banned the practice of conversion therapy. Conversion therapy is the practice of attempting to change someone who doesn't identify as heterosexual to become heterosexual. The ordinance was passed and the rules were suspended 6-1 on Monday by the City Council, with Council Member Dave Bozen voting against it, making Waterloo the third governmental entity in Iowa to ban the practice. The City of Davenport and Lynd County are the other two. The ordinance, written by Ward 2 Council Member Jonathan Greider, states that residents could make a complaint to the city attorney or the Human Rights Commission that a licensed medical professional is practicing conversion therapy. The issue would then be looked into with a letter sent out if the process goes forward. That would allow the city to report a potential ethical violation to medical licensing bodies. The ordinance says in Waterloo, if you are in the LGBTQ+ community, you cannot be subjected to what amounts to a harmful practice trying to convince you to be someone you are not. That's a quote from Councilman Greider. He said numbers from Iowa Safe Schools, which helped with Greider, state there have been 6 complaints of conversion therapy practice in the area during the past year. He did not specify whether those complaints were about counseling by medical professionals or pastors, but the ordinance passed does not stop unlicensed clergy from providing counsel. Of the 33 community members who spoke at the public comment portion of the meeting, many noted they were concerned The council has no authority to pass such an ordinance. Bozen said this is why he voted against it. Quote, my vote is not based on one side's ideology. It's based on the fact that this ordinance may not be legal, Bozen said. Quote, I believe it will be challenged in court, and it is not the city council's purview to enact this ordinance. Others believed the ordinance was redundant, stating that there are currently standards in place to stop the use of conversion therapy, since many major medical associations have denounced the practice. Quote, there's no need for the city to be involved in this at all, resident Al Manning said. Quote, I see no reason for this ordinance to go through, yet you seem to be insistent on pushing it. He said the ordinance has just created a divisive atmosphere. Greider, along with other council members who voiced their opinion before the vote, said multiple avenues of reporting aren't necessarily a bad thing. Quote, if folks don't want to confront their abuser through the Department of Human Services, they can contact the city attorney or Human Rights Commission, Greider said. We are simply providing guidance for folks who are being abused, who need extra help because they are being abused, unquote. However, a handful of residents believe the council does have a place in the conversation of banning the practice. They said it would protect the city's children. Quote, the youth in our community need to know that if they are forced into conversion therapy, there's an option available for their own protection, Mike Knapp said. One woman, Jill Miller, said both of her children are moving out of Iowa due to, quote, what is happening to villainize the LGBTQ plus community. She said her children need to know that cities and counties are protecting them. One resident, Mara, who did not provide a last name and identifies as a queer woman, said that she doesn't feel safe in the Cedar Valley, Iowa, or the U.S. She mentioned Cedar Falls Mayor Rob Green, who said he would not sign an LGBTQ plus Pride Month proclamation for June due to his Christian faith. After a heated council meeting there earlier this month, he signed the proclamation. She also said she did not feel safe in Waterloo because the council did not pass the conversion therapy ban the first time it appeared on the agenda in March. State Senator Sandy Solomon, a Republican from Janesville, came up to the podium as well after a few residents mentioned the legislature passing bills that are focused on the LGBTQ plus population, such as a law that bans gender-affirming medical care for transgender children. Solomon said that she knows that some of the legislation passed has been deemed as anti-LGBTQ. Quote, I don't believe that to be the case, she said. The council chambers erupted in laughter. Solomon said she attended the meeting because, although she doesn't represent Waterloo or Black Hawk County, many of her constituents go to Waterloo for medical services. She believes the ordinance would limit their choices of therapy. Quote, families ought to be able to choose counseling that best fits the goal they have for their minor child, Salmon said, suggesting mental health providers shouldn't be denied an ability to counsel based on their faith. Quote, it is wrong, based on principles of freedom of religion, freedom of speech, parents' rights, professional code of ethics for practitioners, and equal protection of law, unquote. After Solomon spoke, Mayor Quinton Hart said one of the challenges people are having is that they don't have an opportunity to properly communicate with legislators at the state level. Our next story was written by Andy Malone. Community welcomes, christens new remodeled Cedar Falls City Hall, and begins with a photograph showing building official Jamie Castle as she gives a tour of the newly remodeled Cedar Falls City Hall on Monday. And we see her standing in front of a group of tourists in a hallway taking part in the tour. Dateline Cedar Falls. Officials christened the newly remodeled City Hall on Monday before the City Council meeting. The $4.5 million project at 220 Clay Street wrapped up earlier this year after about a year of work that required staff to temporarily relocate beginning in early 2022. Years of planning have produced transformational changes. The ribbon-cutting ceremony, led by Mayor Rob Green and Gros Cedar Valley Ambassador Richard Morris, provided an opportunity to tour the two-floor, 38,000-square-foot building. Every area saw some work to ensure the building has a longer life and is better suited to meet the needs of city's employees and residents. The building was constructed in 1968 and expanded in 1999. Quote, "It's been a long time coming," said Jamie Castle, city building official and project manager. Quote, "It's what needed to be done, and it took a lot of steps to get there," unquote. Improvements were made that aren't always visible, like the installation of new heating, ventilation, air conditioning, electrical, and plumbing infrastructure. Other changes are very clear. For example, the lower floor has been transformed after serving as office space since the police station moved to the new Public Safety Center on South Main Street in 2019. Tour guides highlighted how the old holding cells have been made into unisex bathrooms. About 60 to 65 employees now work at City Hall, including Mayor Rob Green, City Administrator Rob Gaines, Community Developer Director Stephanie Sheets, and Finance and Business Operations Director Jennifer Rodenbeck. The renovations created more areas with natural light and meeting rooms to foster collaboration. Safety was another focus. City employees who engage with residents in the common area now are protected by bulletproof glass. Improved customer service was another goal. The ground level has become a one-stop shop, sparing residents trips up and down the stairs, as was often the case previously. And the entire building is more compliant to the Americans with Disabilities Act. More accommodating bathrooms and doors have been installed, and ramps have been added. Quote, "It's cool to see what has been done," said Deborah Bunker, who's lived in Cedar Falls for 20 years and came with her husband and son. Quote, "This was the best time to stop by since you wouldn't typically come during business hours for a tour." Quote, "We love living in Cedar Falls because we have a well-run city government and appreciate having good trash service, parks, and water. Part of being a good citizen is knowing what's going on and getting involved." Steve and Bonnie Smith were among a couple of dozen people checking out City Hall. They've been residents for decades. Quote, "I remember when City Hall was built," said Steve Smith. The couple hadn't been in the building for a while and was curious about what had been done. Quote, "They've modernized it, and it looks to better meet the needs of residents," said Bonnie Smith. Quote, "There's a better flow to the building, and it's very welcoming. The space looks like it's better used," unquote. The council chambers was given a fresh new look. Openness, again, was a goal, with an enlarged foyer space now outside the chambers for events and as an overflow space for packed meetings. It had been a narrow hallway. The Civics Headquarters, as Mayor Rob Green calls it, offers a new timeline graphic on the wall of the upper floor hallway outside the new foyer, and other awards, mementos, and photos are sprinkled throughout the building to celebrate the city's history and character. Quote, "It feels good to see the finished product," said Cam Birrell, a journeyman with K&W Electric. Quote, "It looks good and is functioning like it's supposed to," unquote. K&W Electric was responsible for all new lighting, outlets, panels, and rewiring. "Overall, the project was smooth from start to finish," said Taylor Kramer, project director with Peters Construction Corporation. Quote, "I'm most proud of the foyer and the council chambers and all the displays and signage. It all came together really nicely," unquote. In November 2021, the council voted 6-1 to accept the low construction bid of $3.85 million placed by Waterloo-based Peters Construction Corporation. Council member Dave Sires objected. "Soft costs, equipment and furniture, bring the total cost closer to $4.5 million, including lead design work completed by Emergent Architecture of Cedar Falls. Officials say the project stayed under budget. The City Hall remodel, somewhat controversial because of the cost, is the largest building project since smaller renovations were completed at the Recreation Center at 110 East 13th Street during the COVID-19 pandemic. The next big building project may be rebuilding the Hearst Center for the Arts. Planning has begun, and $8.3 million is earmarked for 2026 through 2028, with a $2.3 million expected to be fundraised. Next, we have a sad story titled Former Waterloo Teen Killed in Fort Dodge Shooting, filed by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Waterloo. A former Waterloo teen is the latest victim of gun violence in Fort Dodge. Police said Adrian LaPree Grover was shot in the chest with a handgun around 2:45 a.m. Saturday in a neighborhood on 10th Avenue Southwest. He was 18 years old. Grover had lived in Waterloo, according to friends. He later moved to Fort Dodge, where his father and other relatives reside. One person has been arrested in connection with Grover's death. Police arrested Quantarius Liddell Altman, 18, of Fort Dodge, on a charge of first-degree murder. He was also arrested for first-degree harassment for allegedly pointing a gun at Taylor Presswood and threatening her during the incident. Court records show Altman has a prior conviction for allegedly shooting a rifle into a group of people in June of 2022 in a Fort Dodge parking lot, injuring one person. He is awaiting trial for a November 2022 traffic stop where police found a handgun following a report of gunfire at Fort Dodge apartment complex. This is the second tragedy for Grover's family in recent years. His brother, Edward Jace Brown of Fort Dodge, passed away in October 2022. He was 31. Now the next article we have to read promises to be a long one. It's titled, Senators Talk About Efforts in Legislature. Local Iowa House lawmakers rate 2023 legislative session. Story was written by Caleb McCullough of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. The Courier Des Moines Bureau surveyed Northeast Iowa legislators to get their views on the highs and lows of the 2023 legislative session that ended last month. Below are responses from members of the Iowa House. Jerome Amos Jr. Jerome Amos Jr. is a Democrat who resides in Waterloo and represents House District 62. He is a college instructor and in his first term in the Iowa House. Key votes: education savings accounts, no. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, no. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, no. Loosening child labor laws, no. Bill sponsored, House File 217, eliminates the ability of an applicant for retail alcohol licenses to appeal a local authority's denial, instead allowing the applicant to challenge the denial in court. That did not pass. Also under the heading of bills sponsored, Senate File 219 strikes requirement that temporary unemployment be limited to 4 weeks. That did not pass. House File 690 extends postpartum Medicaid coverage from 60 days to 12 months. That did not pass. Successes of the session. Quote, we had a lot of bills go through, and 90% of those, I say 90%, that's just a guess, were bipartisan. We passed them from a standpoint of what was good for the people of Iowa, unquote. Disappointments from the session. There's a lot of issues that were brought forward that, in my mind, should not have been brought forward within the legislature. What I'm talking about are the LGBTQ plus issues and those types of things where we're going after kids in school. And I've told some of my legislators on the other side, and I didn't think that those were the things that we should have been addressing. We have far too many other issues, mental health issues, infrastructure issues, and just different things that we could have and should have been addressing as opposed to going after people, unquote. Next, we have Tammy Brown Powers. Tammy Brown Powers is a Democrat who resides in Waterloo and represents House District 61. She is a therapist, and in her fourth term in the Iowa House, Brown Powers is the ranking member of the House Appropriations Committee. Under key votes, education savings accounts, no. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, no. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, no. Loosening child labor laws, no. Bills she sponsored include House File 120, which requires law enforcement to provide risk assessments around domestic abuse. That did not pass. House File 122 requires the state labor commissioner to create standards for mitigating infectious diseases, including COVID-19, which that did not pass. House File 189 increases dental reimbursement rates under Medicaid. That did not pass. Under successes of the session, quote, one of the successes that we passed the bill for the suicide hotline number to be on the back of all student IDs. This year, I was able to get a Republican partner to run the bill, and the Waterloo Student City Council kids were the ones that lobbied for that last year and this year and got such good bipartisan support for their bill. And then it passed, and it's actually being signed by the governor this week. So that probably is a hometown success. Just because I've been working with the Waterloo Student City Council group for about 3 years, and this was something that they really were passionate about for students. It's a small bill, but I think it will save lives in the long run, and so that makes it a huge bill for Iowans, unquote. Under disappointments from the session, quote, I'm the ranking member of Appropriations, and I was disappointed that I think we really got derailed at the end of the session because Speaker Grassley and the Senate leaders were not able to come to a working agreement. And so, as we looked at the overall budget, we knew that this was a year we could have been robust. This is a year we have a lot of money that was put back. We had the surplus available. We had good money coming into the state of Iowa. We had some leftover ARPA dollars. We had some money from the COVID interest in the bank. And so this would have been a great year to really reach out and do some really robust things for Iowans across the board in all areas. But just as the leaders and their inability to work together and get along, those fell apart again, and that's too bad, unquote. Pat Grassley. Pat Grassley is a Republican who resides in New Hartford and represents House District 57. He is a farmer and in his ninth term in the Iowa House. Grassley is the Speaker of the House and Chair of the Education Reform Committee. Key votes. Education savings accounts, yes. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, yes. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, yes. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bill sponsored. House File 1, property tax limitations, signed into law with amendments as HF 718. Senate File 103 requires landowner consent to enter into easement negotiations with hazardous liquid pipeline companies. Did not pass. House File 3 creates new regulations and eligibility tests for public assistance, passed with amendments as SF 494. Under successes of the session, quote, Iowans have come to know Iowa House Republicans as a caucus that will deliver on our promises to Iowans. Representing all 99 of Iowa's 99 counties, House Republicans are in a better position than ever to listen to Iowans and deliver on their priorities. This session, we made property tax reform House File 1. It was a top concern for Iowans, so it was a top priority for us. We were able to deliver about $100 million in property tax relief, creating new exemptions for Iowa seniors and veterans, and providing some certainty for all property taxpayers. It also laid the groundwork for us to deliver more property tax relief in the near future, unquote. Under disappointments from the session, quote, at the start of the session, House Republicans released House Files 1 through 13, outlining our priorities for the session. We were able to deliver on 9 of those priorities. One that did not make it to the governor's desk would have helped address the teacher shortage in Iowa. House File 255 created additional pathways to licensed teachers in Iowa. We also passed a bill to allow schools to compensate student teachers, but that bill also died in the Senate. We will continue to make addressing our teacher shortage a priority when we return next session, unquote. Chad Ingalls is next. He is a Republican who resides in Randalia and represents House District 68. He is a farmer and in his second term in the Iowa House. Ingalls is the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Key votes. Education savings account, no. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, no. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics and school library books, no. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bill sponsored. House File 30 expands eligibility for the Butchery Innovation Fund, and it passed as House File 185. House File 80 changes licensing rules for farmers market vendors, and that passed with amendments as House File 661. House File 297 increases funding to school districts for the statewide preschool program. That did not pass. Under successes of the session, Chad Ingalls said the following. Well, smaller in scope, I think it's great that the legislature continued funding for the Butchery Innovation Grant Program. This program has been very well received by and supportive of meat lockers since it was started in 2021. Also along the same line, the legislature created and funded the new Dairy Innovation Fund to provide grants for dairy processing and technology. This is something I sponsored along with Representative Shannon Latham last year. A big success was also the passage of a property tax relief bill during the last week of the session. The most important part of this bill was that the legislature actually did something instead of punting it to next session when the two chambers had different proposals, unquote. Disappointments from the session? Quote, a couple of the larger disappointments might the legislature's inability to provide more funding for nursing homes. While we did increase funding, it was $10 million less than what the House thought was the right amount. Nursing homes are undergoing severe financial stress, and I thought we should have done more to support them. On a more personal note, I am disappointed that we weren't able to pass a bill I sponsored to provide scholarship funds for students with intellectual and learning disabilities to attend college programs like University of Iowa REACH program and the Northwestern NEXT program, unquote. And at this point, listeners, we're going to take a quick break to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, May 17th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's go back and finish reading this article about the reactions of our state legislators, and then we'll turn to the obituaries listed in today's Courier. Representative Craig Johnson is next. Craig Johnson is a Republican who resides in Independence and represents House District 67. He works in business development and is in his fourth term in the Iowa House. Johnson is the vice chair of the House Education Committee and an assistant majority leader. Key votes. Education savings accounts, yes. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming care ban for minors, yes. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics and school library books, yes. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bills sponsored. House File 544 exempts the price of lodging supplies sold to a lodging provider from the state sales tax. That did not pass. House File 2 prohibits state from investing in companies that have environmental, social, and governance policies. That did not pass. House File 9 requires parent or guardian consent if a student requests to be called by a different name or pronouns, and that passed as part of SF 496. Under successes of the session, he did not respond. Under disappointments from the session, he also did not respond to that one. Bob Kresick is a Democrat who resides in Cedar Falls and represents House District 75. Now retired, he formerly worked at John Deere and is in his 10th term in the Iowa House. Kresick is the ranking member of the House Public Safety Committee. Key votes: education savings accounts, no. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, no. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, no. Loosening child labor laws, no. Bill sponsored, House File 15, requires Iowa community colleges to offer education and employment programs to people leaving prisons or jails, and that did not pass. House File 19 makes eligibility changes for mental health professional loan repayment program. That did not pass. House File 36 makes changes to rules for school driving permit holders. Did not pass. Under successes of the session, quote, my thoughts are we are able to come together and pass a bipartisan property tax bill. Disappointments from the session, quote, the lack of resources to help with the lack of services with mental health accessibility across the state. We need to focus on improving critical care access and early intervention in our community and schools. Joss Magers is a Republican who resides in Grundy Center and represents House District 54. He is an Iowa State Trooper and in his first term in the Iowa House. Key votes: education savings accounts, yes. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, yes. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics and school library books, yes. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bill sponsored. House File 126 allows local emergency management agencies to levy property taxes for their operations and remove that authority from counties. That did not pass. House File 127 provides that a public safety telecommunicator or an emergency management coordinator is included in the protected occupation category of the Iowa Public Employees Retirement System. That did not pass. House File 155 increases penalties for a felon in possession of a firearm. Did not pass. Successes of the session. Quote, coming into this session as a freshman legislator, there was more than one notable success. We passed education savings accounts, putting in parental choice. And also, we worked on a bill that we passed to get more control back into the classroom to the teachers. And there was property tax reform. There was a lot of successes in this session, and I was happy to be and very fortunate to be part of this legislative session, unquote. Disappointments from the session. Quote, we had such a historic year. We had some really good legislation. We asked for some things, and unfortunately, you're not going to get everything that you asked for. But that's just part of it, unquote. Charlie Thompson is a Republican who resides in Charles City and represents House District 58. He is a retired Marine and federal government executive and is in his first term at the Iowa House. Key votes: education savings accounts, yes. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, yes. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, yes. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bill sponsored. House File 454 requires school administrators to teach classes. That did not pass. House File 542 prohibits the government or citizens of China from buying property in the state. That did not pass. House File 543 requires members of a committee to swear that a ballot was cast in secret when voting in elections. That did not pass. Successes of the session. He didn't respond to that, nor to the topic of disappointments from the session. Derek Wolfe. Derek Wolfe was a Republican who resides in Hudson and represents House District 76. He is a farmer and in his first term in the Iowa House. Wolfe is the vice chair of the House Agriculture Committee. Key votes: education savings accounts, yes. Property tax reductions, yes. Gender-affirming health care ban for minors, yes. Restrictions on LGBTQ topics, school library books, yes. Loosening child labor laws, yes. Bill sponsored, House File 388, prohibits people from flying drones over agricultural property. That did not pass. House File 66, requires the construction and maintenance of rumble strips on certain highways. That did not pass. House File 8, prohibits instruction on sexual orientation and gender identity in kindergarten through third grade, which passed as part of SF 496. He did not respond to the question of successes of the session, nor to disappointments from the session. And that's the end of that long listing of positions from our state legislators. And now we turn to obituaries listed in the Courier today. In Denver, Lois Marie Miller, 85, of Denver, died Sunday, May 14th, at Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo, after several years of having health issues. Lois was born December 3, 1937, in Alta Vista, Iowa, the daughter of Alex and Hazel Ross Bamer. She attended school through the 10th grade in Alta Vista and later received her GED. On April 21, 1953, she was united in marriage to Lewis Miller in Alta Vista. The couple would make their home in Denver in the early 1960s. Lois helped Lewis with the family trucking company and then drove bus for Denver Community Schools for 33 years. Lewis passed away in 2011, and Lois continued to live in her home until moving to Willow Winds in Denver in November of 2021. Lois loved to go camping. They took many trips from coast to coast over the years. Fishing was always a highlight, especially in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and along the Mississippi River. She was an active member of WELCA and St. Peter Lutheran Church in Denver. A visitation for Lois will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday, May 19th, at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver, and for an hour prior to services at the church. Funeral services will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, May 20th, at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Denver, with Pastor Reed Peterson officiating. Burial will follow in the Garden of Memories Cemetery in Waterloo. Memorial contributions may be directed to the church, and online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver is in charge of the arrangements. Their phone number is area code 319-984-5379. In Grundy Center, Carol, known as Pinky Lee Doak of Grundy Center, Iowa, died peacefully at the age of 84 at Parkview Manor in Rhinebeck, Iowa, on May 12th. Pinky was born May 23, 1938, in Marshalltown, the son of Lynn and Hazel Arnold Doak. He grew up on the family farm west of Grundy Center, attending country school and graduating from Grundy Center High School in 1956. Pinky took over the family farm around 1980 and spent much of his time working the fields and raising both feed and show cattle. He farmed until the early 2000s, but still continued to help those who rented the land and building site. Pinky met the love of his life, Pamela Nielsen, at the Grundy County Fair Rodeo, and later they married on August 13, 1977, at the United Methodist Church in Grundy Center. The couple raised a son, Nielsen, and a daughter, Carolee, on the farm, until moving to town in 1988. He enjoyed bowling and being active in the church. Pinky was a very outgoing guy, never knowing a stranger. He thought of everyone as a friend he had not yet met. The funeral service will be Saturday, May 20th, at the Grundy Center United Methodist Church. The visitation will be Friday, May 19th, from 4 to 7 o'clock p.m., also at the church. A private family burial will take place at Rose Hill Cemetery in Grundy Center. Please direct memorials to the family. Next, in Jessup, John Russell Pullen, 70, of Jessup, died on Sunday, May 14th, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital in Waterloo. John was born on August 9th, 1952, in Waterloo, the son of Edwin and Wanda Paulson Pullen. He graduated from Hudson High School with the class of 1971. He married Elnice Sandridge on April 7th, 1973, at Hudson United Methodist Church. She died October 21st of 2010. After high school, John worked for Meany Casket Company. He then went to work for Deere & Company, starting in the foundry. He retired in 2008 after 37 years as an ambassador at the Northeast Site Tractor Works. He was a member of UAW Local 838. John was a drag racer who loved to work on his own classic cars. John was well known for being witty and dishing out many one-liners. A visitation for John will be from 4 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, May 18th, at Lock on 4th in Waterloo. Funeral services are 1:30 p.m. on Friday, May 19th, at Jessup Bible Fellowship Church, with burial in Memorial Park Cemetery in Waterloo. Memorials may be directed to the family. Lock on 4th is in charge of arrangements. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Next in Waterloo, Ann L. Tanruther, 70, of Orange Center in Waterloo, Iowa, passed away Saturday evening, May 13th, at the Tanruther family home from health complications. The firstborn child of Robert and Charlotte Tanruther, she was born on her parents' fourth anniversary, September 16th, 1952. Anne attended Orange Township School, the same site as two previous generations of family members, besides participating in the Orange Blossoms 4-H Club and showing Holstein heifers at the Black Hawk 4-H Fair. After graduating in 1970 from Orange of Waterloo High School, she enrolled in McPherson College, McPherson, Kansas, making lifelong friends there and playing pranks that will be long remembered. In 1974, she graduated college with a degree in education. Upon arriving home in Waterloo, Anne took a preschool teaching position at Byron Avenue Daycare Center. She continued to teach preschool at various sites, including Head Start facilities around Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Hudson, and Independence, for the next 36 years, retiring in 2011. One summer teaching experience led her to Okinawa for camp adventure at a U.S. military base. She took additional classes at UNI and Hawkeye Community College. Later, Anne took a columnist position with the Hudson Herald newspaper, writing Orange Community News. For decades, she was active in the South Waterloo Church of the Brethren as a teacher of Sunday school and Bible school and women's fellowship member. She enjoyed doing crafts, often decorating candy-filled jars for people in her neighborhood and church on holidays, and taking care of her cats. On Friday, May 19th, a visitation will occur at 10 o'clock a.m. at the South Waterloo Church of the Brethren, followed by a funeral service at 11 a.m. Burial will take place at the Orange Cemetery. A link to South Waterloo Church of the Brethren's YouTube live streaming will be posted on her obituary at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Memorials may be directed to the South Waterloo Church of the Brethren, Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Locke at Tower Park is assisting the family. Locke at Tower Park is located at 4140 Kimball Avenue in Waterloo. Their phone number is area code 319-233-3146. Cedar Falls. Donald, known as Don A. Denkinger, 86 of Cedar Falls, died Friday, May 12, 2023, in Waterloo. He was born on August 28, 1936, in Cedar Falls, the son of Anton and Marie Hay Denkinger. Don graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1954 and attended Wartburg College. Don entered the Army for 2 years, then graduated from Al Summers Umpire School. He married Gail Price on November 24, 1962, in Humboldt. Don was a Major League Baseball umpire for 30 years for the American League from 1969 to 1998. He was a member of the St. John Lutheran Church in Cedar Falls. He was a Rotarian in Waterloo and Sun Lakes, Arizona. Don enjoyed golfing with friends in Iowa and Arizona. He loved sports, watching and attending University of Iowa football games and UNI basketball games, traveling with his wife of 60 years, visiting friends in the baseball community, and spending time with grandchildren. Services for Don are at 11 o'clock a.m. on Friday, May 19th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Cedar Falls. Visitation is from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 18th, at Locke at Tower Park, and 10:30 prior to services Friday at the church. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery in Waterloo. Military rites provided by the Army National Guard Honor Guard, Waterloo American Legion Post 138, and VFW Post 1623. Memorials are to St. John Lutheran Church, Cedar Valley Hospice, UMPS Care Charities. Condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Next, we have 5 death notices listed. Mary Ann Graham of LaPorte City died Monday, May 15th at Bickford Cottages in Cedar Falls. Arrangements are with Locke in LaPorte City. James A. Raymond, also known as Ruby James Knight, 68, of Waterloo, died Thursday, May 11th, at home. Arrangements are with Locke at Tower Park. Willie R. Stewart, 70, of Waterloo, died Friday, May 12th, at Allen Memorial Hospital in Waterloo. Arrangements are with Haggerty Wychoff Grarup Funeral Service. James, known as Jim K. Wood, 73, of Waterloo, died Saturday, April 29th, in his home. Arrangements are with Haggerty Wychoff Grarup Funeral Service. And Marlis Jean Rage, 94, of Dysart, died Tuesday, May 16th, at Sunrise Hill Care Center in Traer. Arrangements are with Overton Funeral Home in Dysart. Now that's all of the obituaries. Let's continue reading local news from the Courier. On the Cedar Valley page, Mandy Harvey of America's Got Talent, local bands to headline Spectrum Jam Fest, story filed by Melody Parker, and begins with the photograph of Mandy Harvey holding a guitar. Cedar Falls. Mandy Harvey, an award-winning jazz and pop singer and songwriter, will headline the second annual Spectrum Jam Fest on Saturday. Sponsored by the University of Northern Iowa School of Music's Spectrum Project, the event is from 2 to 6 p.m. downtown at River Place Plaza, 100 East 2nd Street. Gary Kroger will be Master of Ceremonies. Admission is free, but donations are requested to benefit the UNI Spectrum Project, a movement, music, drama, and art opportunity for children with differing abilities, including autism, cerebral palsy, hearing and vision impairments, and Down syndrome. The outdoor concert will showcase 36 elementary, middle, and high school bands as they perform music ranging from rock, pop, metal, and alternative to country and hip-hop. In addition, several performers from the UNI Spectrum Project will perform, along with a UNI faculty metal punk band, Corn Riot, and Harvey as headliner. There will also be a silent auction and raffle prizes, including a Harvey-signed ukulele, will be given away each hour. Urban Pie will be selling pizza slices. Since it was first launched last spring, Spectrum Jam Fest fulfills several objectives, said Kevin Drow, UNI Associate Professor of Music and UNI Spectrum Project Coordinator. Quote, it's really two things at once. Teachers are starting to incorporate rock and other kinds of contemporary music in what they teach in schools. So Jam Fest provides a platform for students to do a couple of tunes at an outdoor music festival and be a rock star for a day, unquote. At the same time, Drow wanted to create a fundraiser for the UNI Spectrum Project. It made sense to put these two things together and make it a benefit concert with a headliner, he explained. Harvey, who is deaf, was the golden buzzer pick on the 12th season of America's Got Talent. There have been more than 500 million views of her audition video for the show. The performer lost her hearing after an illness when she was 19, but recently received a cochlear implant. She has done work for Music Not Impossible with Not Impossible Labs and is active in No Barriers USA. A former student in the UNI Ukulele Club worked with Harvey at No Barriers and made the connection with Drow. Quote, we're so excited to have her here. Mandy has an amazing voice, and her songs are really inspiring. She's overcome a lot of hurdles to follow her passion for music, Drow said. She'll perform original songs at the concert, as well as other tunes. Quote, she'll also invite students to come up and play ukulele with her. Bring your own ukulele, or we'll have ukuleles there with chord sheets. Anyone can come up, grab a ukulele, and join Mandy on stage to play, unquote. The Spectrum Project provides children with artistic, creative fun on Saturday mornings, along with opportunities to explore their creative spirit and practice communication and socialization skills while putting together a show. Productions incorporate performers' ideas with direction and design by paid staff members. Student volunteers from UNI, Hawkeye Community College, and other area colleges and universities serve as buddies during rehearsals to assist performers. Registration typically takes place in October, with rehearsals beginning in January for a spring production performed in April. There is a cost involved in the project. Funds raised at Spectrum Jam Fest will help provide scholarships. For more information, go online to spectrumproject.org. Next, we have the police blotter filed by Jeff Reinitz. One injured in stabbing in Waterloo neighborhood, Waterloo. One person was taken to the hospital with stab wounds following a Monday night altercation. The victim told police he was walking on Leland Avenue around 9:30 p.m. when he was approached and attacked by a man. After the altercation, the victim didn't realize he had been stabbed and returned to his home on Verdon Street to sleep. About 2 hours later, he discovered his injuries and called 911. Paramedics with Waterloo Fire Rescue took him to a nearby hospital for treatment. No arrests have been made in the stabbing. Next, mother charged after toddlers found wandering in diapers, Waterloo. A Waterloo woman has been arrested after her children were found wandering in the streets in diapers in the rain. Waterloo police charged Caitlin Marie Sheil Stewart, 27, with two counts of child endangerment. She was released pending trial. A neighbor spotted the children, both girls, around ages 2 and 3, shortly after 6 a.m. Friday, walking unsupervised, without clothing, in the 5800 block of Dalton Drive. The neighbor corralled the shivering toddlers and called police. Paramedics with Waterloo Fire Rescue took both children to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center as a precaution. The mother called police around 8:45 a.m. looking for the children. Police determined the two had wandered away from their mobile home on Quigby Drive at around 5:30 a.m. Now we have the Metro Briefs column. Sessions offered on dementia education in Cedar Falls. Western Home Communities will present educational sessions focused on understanding brain changes in dementia and turning challenging situations into positive experiences. Speaker Amanda Bulgareri is Chief Operating Officer of TIPA Snow's Positive Approach to Care and lead mentor with the organization, which strives to enhance the life and relationship of those living with brain change. All-day sessions will be held 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on June 13th and 14th at the Diamond Event Center, 5307 Caraway Lane. Each day's content is the same to allow for more attendees. Registration is required for any sessions. The details are posted at westernhome-communities.org. And now, friends, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Wednesday, May 17th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. We want to remind you that you can access a recording of today's reading of the Courier or the other newspapers around the state of Iowa that we read, and you'll find them on our website, iowaradioreading.org. You can do that at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to Your Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.